This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 31st, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 336 and happy Easter. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, the new Sinbin feature, and the big deal feature, the Trudeau Liberal government's online harms bill, Bill C-63. It's supposed to protect children and stop hate. A former newspaper publisher and broadcast regulator says it is flawed and harmful to free speech. My guest is Peter Menzies. Going to the sin bin this week is the Metro Vancouver Regional Government, its Commissioner Jerry Dobrovolny and Chair George Harvey, for the way they dropped the bomb on taxpayers on the Friday afternoon in the middle of spring break, a classic take out the trash Friday strategy. The North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant is going to cost $3.86 billion and open sometime in 2030. It was supposed to cost $700 million and open in 2020. Harvey didn't face the media, but Dobrovolny did. Lots of excuses. Scope creep, pandemic delays, firing original builder Akshona, and a tit-for-tat legal battle that won't be solved anytime soon. At the end of 2018, I got a tip that the project was already in trouble. It took more than 2 years for politicians to finally fess up when they said it would cost almost $1.06 billion and be ready in 2024, but it got worse. Last fall, Kirk Lapointe broke the story about the $4 billion price tag. Last week, District of North Vancouver Councillor Catherine Pope called for a public inquiry and audit. New Westminster Councillor Daniel Fontaine called for direct elections of Metro Vancouver board members. Right now, they're appointed by their councils. In his Iron Law of Megaprojects, Oxford professor Bent Flubier said that big infrastructure projects come in, quote, over budget, over time, under benefits, over and over again, end quote. Akshona helped build the $16 billion Site C Dam, which doubled in cost under the NDP. The NDP chose Akshona to build the $1.73 billion Patella Bridge and $2.83 billion Broadway Subway. Both are behind schedule, but what's the true cost? And will we find out before the October provincial election? What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. I'm joined by a former editor and publisher of the Calgary Herald, Peter Menzies, who's also former vice chair of the Canadian Radio, Television, Telecommunications Commission, Canada's broadcasting regulator. And he's now a senior fellow with McDonald Laurier Institute, a think tank. And his columns appear in various national and international publications. Peter is joining me on this edition of the podcast to talk about Bill C-63, the online harms bill, tabled February 26th by the Trudeau Liberal minority government. It's a two-for-one bill. It's supposed to protect children and stop online hate, but the questions are, will it do either? And should they be separated? Should they be tabled at all? This bill targets seven kinds of harmful content. Three are specific to children, such as content that sexually victimizes a child, used to bully a child, content induces a child to self-harm. The other four are about intimate content communicated without consent, content that foments hatred or incites violent extremism or terrorism or just incites violence in general. The internet, unfortunately, has been used to harm children and for children to harm each other or themselves. And if we could go back in a time machine and reconstruct the internet, one of the very first steps, if not the first step, might be to limit access for children and to build more protection for children. But those days are gone. So the internet is also a main vehicle for media, big and small, to inform citizens and hold governments to account. And are the protections in this bill for children being used as a Trojan horse?
Well, I've certainly used the phrase Trojan horse myself, so I'm not going to deny that that's what it is. But it really is three parts. And the part about keeping children from harm is a very legitimate part, I think, that we have to do. I mean, I think at the assumption at the front end of the evolution of the internet was that people are generally good, and I think that's true. People are generally good, but there are bad people on the internet world, just as there are bad people walking down your street in front of your house or your apartment, just as we speak. So bad things happen. Having written a paper that actually called for a Social Media Responsibility Act, because I do think you have to have some kind of oversight over social media, by somebody, in particular, and the government is the one that has to do that. And the reason for that is these are very large companies, often monopolistic in nature, and you can't have them running around like a friggin' Bond villain, deciding what they're going to let on their platforms and off their platforms in terms of free speech and that sort of stuff. So the approach taken in that part of the bill to impose a sort of responsibility, a duty to conduct themselves responsibly, I think is a really good idea. So, I mean, having proposed it myself, of course I'm going to say that, right? The fact of the matter is, though, that almost everything this bill is calling on social media companies to do is already illegal, right? And they're already doing. At times they fail, but they do have systems set up. Facebook, Meta, they have 60,000 people employed worldwide, patrolling their platform to try to take down some of this material. In the very early days of the internet, I recall when I was at the CRTC, concerns came up about child pornography, for instance, being available on there. And there have been systems in place involving the police and internet service providers and a dedicated watchdog, which I believe operates still out of Winnipeg, to search and destroy any incidences of child pornography that showed up on the internet. So it's not like it's not being handled. Now that group has asked for more powers, and so sure, if it's that ubiquitous, I don't have any problem with that. So if they just kept that part of Bill C-63, if they just kept the legislation to that part, the imposing the duties, basically to do no harm and to oversee things that are already illegal, although I'd prefer, in a sense, too, that in addition to that, they would actually enforce the law as frequently as they can, I think would be okay. It's the other parts that are problematic.
This law also talks about a maximum $70,000 fine for hate speech. There's even provisions for house arrest, even life in prison. There's this Digital Safety Commission that's proposed, which would be basically government-appointed bureaucrats. A fine line between what's considered hate speech and speech that some people hate to hear, speech that might be offensive but not crossing the line into other territories. Is this law really just censorship by another name?
One of the most offensive parts of Bill C-63 and should be taken out of it entirely is this resurrection of Section 13 of the human rights legislation for which allows the human rights, the Canadian, not the provincial ones, but the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal to accept complaints based on the fact somebody that using that words can be discrimination, essentially. So if I call you an old white man, and if white men were old white guys were covered under the human rights legislation, which they're not, but that's another story, you could take the complaint to the Human Rights Commission, and they could decide whether they are going to advance it towards the tribunal, and I could be awarded $20,000 in costs, which you would have to pay because I hurt your feelings, essentially, or which I think is going way too far. I am in, I have grown to become in favor of, certain hate speech laws. I think the one that we have is perfectly good. It's where you basically say you cannot be encouraging people to do harm, physical harm, to another person. If you get into this harm, this definition of harm as hurt feelings, good heavens, I mean, where does that end? I mean, even there was a piece in the National Post and an interview, I think, on True North the other day with the former head of the Canadian Human Rights Commission saying this is a bad idea. the commission would I mean, I'm not putting these words in his mouth. This is my interpretation. The commission would be just flooded with complaints. In particular, I mean, take something like the war in Gaza going on right now. Can you imagine the volume of complaints that, you know, you're an Islamophobe, you're an anti-Semite, what you said makes me feel oppressed, what you said offends me. And, you know, we do get offended. There's no question that, you know, we offend each other with what we say, but that's the price you pay for freedom.
In the U.S., where Congress voted to force ByteDance, the Chinese company that owns TikTok, the very popular video app, they voted to force ByteDance to divest TikTok because of national security concerns, privacy concerns. Some of those concerns are shared up here. Last year, governments in Canada, including the federal government, refused to let their own staff continue to use that app on federal devices. The industry minister just this week gave mixed messaging that it's okay for parents to let their kids use TikTok, even though TikTok is a channel which has had some well-documented cases of online harms towards children, the various challenges that have led some children to self-harm or even death. Why do you think these mixed messages are coming out of this federal government the way they are?
I think it's because this government has shown through its previous legislation, Bill C-11, the Senate bill S-210, and C-18, that it doesn't really understand the internet. I mean, I know that's a big thing to say, but I'm not the only one saying it. And some of the issues they've been addressing, the Online Streaming Act, the Online News Act, and to a certain extent, even the Online Harms Act, is kind of missing what are really some of the, I'm not saying some of these things aren't issues, but the really big issues around the internet is data collection, right? And use and trafficking in it and selling it to each other, right? So if you go on Google and you're searching for a vacation in Florida, and the next thing you've got nothing but, you know, vacations to Florida on your Facebook feed, you're going, wait a second, how did my Google activity wind up on Facebook and that sort of stuff? And it's begun to creep people out. As little as 10 years ago, even less, everybody was praising the wonderful democratizing power of the internet. So what you have going on right now is a little bit of a tech lash. And I think governments are, in some cases the actions are appropriate, but in some cases they are overreacting. And I think governments generally fear this wild, you know, I mean, it was all a lot of fun when the Arab Spring was happening and people were, you know, activists were tweeting to each other, democracy activists were tweeting to each other and communicating on social media, and everybody was going, oh, wow. But then Donald Trump got elected and everybody was, that's not what we were looking for. And then Brexit happened. And governments responded again. And it's the sense for governments that they were losing control, which I think caused a lot of response. And, you know, in some cases, you know, there are some difficult things that people have, that are being said on the internet and mistruths and that sort of stuff. But my own take on it is that one of the biggest sources of it is actually politicians themselves. So, I mean, that's kind of where we've wound up right now, where people are looking to impose some sort of order based on an old-fashioned publishing model where there's curation before publication, which I think betrays a misunderstanding of the internet, because the internet is not really about that. It should be about having laws enforced. And the problem with one of the problems with the Online Harms Bill is it actually downloads a lot of the responsibility for these things like hate speech and, you know, sharing of intimate images, child sexual exploitation, recruitment to terrorism, radicalization. Those things are all illegal, but it's actually making the platforms responsible for the policing. I think they do have a responsibility. I agree with that. But for instance, this bill C-63 did not include an amendment to the criminal code that would have added the creation of deep fakes to the intimate images category and added that. So you can go ahead and create deep fakes in Canada if you want that superimpose Taylor Swift's or anybody else's face on a porn actress's body and distribute a video of that. And there are no repercussions except perhaps a civil suit. And if you're some guy with no money hanging out in his mom's basement, nobody's going to get anything from suing you anyway. When in my view, that should be added to the criminal part of it. So you're going to make platforms responsible for patrolling that. But the guy who's actually creating the stuff isn't being held to account. And I would like to see more of that.
Are the politicians being timid? Are they too afraid to actually deal with other aspects such as antitrust measures? But should our governments be approaching this industry like it approaches TV and radio?
Short answer is no. And one of the reasons for that is that it's actually just not possible. I mean, those are good ideas. Those are all good ideas. I mean, in terms of Competition Act. And in the States, there's a lot going on that right now. That's where the companies are based for the most part, right? And that's one of the tricky parts is that these are all global entities. And I'm not really sure how, and that's one of the problems, how do you apply Canada's competition law, which is pretty weak anyway, but how do you apply that to a company based in California? Right? You can't break them up, right? The Americans can, or you can act internationally. And this is, you know, with the digital tax, this has been one of the issues going on where we're trying to get international cooperation, and the web companies are actually even working with them on that, making it their own say to have a digital tax, a basic core tax on that. But everybody's kind of got to be on the same page, doing it the same way. It's kind of the tax in Spain has to be the same as the tax in Portugal. The tax in Canada has to be the same as the tax in the States because of the global nature of the companies. So that's why, you know, trying to do what, you know, Bill C-11 does is trying to take the internet and call it broadcasting and stuff it into a structure built for systems with limited resources that were Canadian only, like cable TV and over-the-air TV and over-the-air radio. Can't possibly work because the technological change that the internet has brought about is too significant for those to work. Canada should have been working on and should continue to strive to work on new communications legislation that recognizes that the internet is our primary form of communication now. And it's the internet where the privacy has to be guarded, where, you know, companies. And this is what you can do. You do what you can do, where you can bring in really good privacy legislation. You know, I mean, TikTok has made that point. They said, if you're worried about what we're doing with our data, show us where we're not obeying the law, right? And nobody has, right? Nobody has yet pointed to one incident of where, when it comes to data sharing, where TikTok hasn't obeyed the law. So if you don't think the laws are tough enough, then bring in new privacy laws and data management laws, and then they would apply to everybody. Because Facebook has commercial arrangements with China, right? They all do, right? So if that's what you're concerned about, then bring in those laws and focus on those things, not necessarily things that where you're, like they did with C-18, where they just tried to beat up on tech companies because they thought there was political gain in it. And that had a very poor outcome.
Do you think that Bill C-63, there's anything that can be amended or changed with this or rescued? Is it too flawed? Will it withstand a charter challenge? Or do you think that the Liberals are just going to plow ahead with support of the NDP and get it through Parliament?
I think they'll just plow ahead. I mean, in with C-11 and C-18, they didn't show really any interest in making significant amendments. The Senate had tried to do a bunch with some of the legislation. You know, there was the argument that this law would apply in C-11's case, could apply to podcasts. They denied that, even though you could read it right in the legislation, and passed the law like that, and then tried to fix it with the regulation saying, well, it shouldn't apply to podcasts. Eventually, somebody will tweak the regulations and it will apply to podcasts. So I really think that with the Online Harms Act, if they were to focus just on those harms, right, and the duties of care, to that they laid out, which I think are quite good, and they were to then take the part of that regarding the Digital Safety Commissioner and tighten the fence around the powers, because they've given far too many powers, then I think you'd have a pretty good piece of legislation, and one that would be welcomed by most people and needed, because much as, you know, your child's behavior is really your responsibility as a parent, I think parents would probably like the idea, and, you know, Facebook themselves would like the idea that it's a safe space in terms of that sort of stuff, and where your kid cannot be groomed by somebody to do something horrible, or anybody, you know, that could happen to. But the rest of it, the criminal code amendments that, which are really, really over the top, they are not necessary, and they should be thrown out. And the additional powers to the Human Rights Tribunal, they should be thrown out too. You want to address those things, bring them into separate legislation, but right now, to go back to your initial point, all of those things are the soldiers inside the Trojan horse, which, as I said, could be trimmed up and made quite presentable.
Well, thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. Peter Menzies, former editor and publisher of the Calgary Herald, former vice chair of the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, and a senior fellow with the McDonald Laurier Institute, and his columns appear in various national and international publications.
Thanks so much for having me.
Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, China warns Taiwan about provoking trouble with live fire drills. Taiwan planning to hold live fire drill in Kinmen in April. Starting on April 2nd, the Army's Kinmen Defense Command will hold live fire drills on Kinmen Island's outer islands of Liyu, Mingu, and Huyu. The drills will consist of several ground-to-sea live fire exercises with trajectories ranging from 1,000 feet to 6,600 feet, concluding on April 25th. In Kyoto news, Japan aims to develop next-gen passenger aircraft around 2035. The new aircraft is expected to be fueled by hydrogen, among other options, but not traditional jet oil, as the growing push for decarbonized transport options drives innovation. In recent years, global airlines have started using sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF, made from materials such as waste food and plants. In Hong Kong Free Press, Article 23, Hong Kong condemns New York Times op-ed on city's lost freedom. Over the past month, the city's security chief, Chris Tang, has hit back at criticism of Article 23 by UK Foreign Minister David Cameron, US Consul General Gregory May, as well as by a series of foreign media outlets. The opinion piece by Maya Wong of US-based NGO Human Rights Watch, which is sanctioned by Beijing, said that following swift enactment of the new security law, some Hong Kongers were trying to dispose of some sensitive books and videos to avoid legal risks. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, downtown Portland's office vacancy rate is highest in the nation, report says. According to Colliers, more than 1.4 million square feet of office space in downtown Portland was available for sublease at the end of 2023. The total available amount of space available for lease downtown was more than 32%. Colliers expects that figure to reach 40% over the next year. San Diego and San Francisco rounded out the top three. Seattle is number 10 on the list. In King 5, what's the difference between Southern Resident and Biggs Killer Whales? Killer whales have often been considered one species, but a new report is outlining the distinct differences between residents and Biggs species. National Marine Fisheries Service's report says resident orcas have smaller dorsal fins, and Biggs orcas are more distinctly black and white. Biggs killer whales stay in smaller groups and prey on much larger marine life, such as seals, dolphins, or porpoises. In Czech news, we saw a vehicle tumbling up the river. Sprout Lake man remembers 1964 Alberni tsunami. Bob Cole was 17 years old on Good Friday, March 27, 1964, the night Port Alberni would change forever. Hours earlier, a massive 9.2 magnitude earthquake had struck Alaska, causing extensive damage and a tsunami that raced down the BC coast. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
Christians around British Columbia who are celebrating Easter, a holiday to reflect on rejuvenation and peace.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 31st, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 31st of March in 1949, Newfoundland joined the Dominion of Canada, becoming the 10th province? And on the 31st of March in 1958, John Diefenbaker's Progressive Conservatives won 208 of the 256 seats in the House of Commons. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. Or follow The Breaker News on X, formerly Twitter, for news as it happens. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.